again.
1, 2, 3, 4. Do you know what that was?
No.
That was me counting in the drums for the intro song.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, no, I like the song that you picked. And changed it recently.
I called up YouTube Audio Library and I said, send me your finest.
So that's what I wanted to ask you. Like, what search term did you search for?
I didn't. I went through that. You can sort those on YouTube Creator app. You can sort them by, like, the most recently added song. So I thought, oh, I'll just find something fresh. And I clicked a few of them. I'm like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. So not a lot of thought.
It is really good. It's a cool drum beat, and then the guitars come in, and I noticed that on the JJ episode, you started it, and then the music went away, and then it came
ran
back.
Out. Yeah. It's a short song.
It's a short song. It's just loops and loops and loops and loops.
About that title on that episode, too, and this is something I don't know if you've given much thought to. Have we standardized how you write out AI? Because it always looks like Al to me whenever I see it capitalized A, and then especially if it's at the beginning of a sentence or whatever. And but A, lowercase AI looks weird, just two vowels, AI. And it reminds me of Adobe Illustrator. Whenever I see AI, that's what I think of.
And may I just say that it's so dumb that a language that only has 26 letters in two variations, caps and non-caps, literally has something that looks the exact same, whether it's an L or it's a capital I.
I know, they didn't really plan that out very well when they were coming up with letters.
And like, a zero looks like people. An O.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That one. Yeah, that one. That can get you a lot, especially on, you know, passwords and stuff. I use LastPass. And they actually have an option on LastPass, too, when you're setting up passwords, to use non-ambiguous letters and numbers, so it won't use L and 0 and O and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's actually got me thinking about the titles of podcasts, though, because now with, like, looking through the analytics of episodes and having almost 100 episodes of a podcast.
Yeah, we're getting there.
It's crazy to see the ones that kind of do well in the archive, as it were, because it's like clearly the only thing that's working is, like, we don't even really get thumbnails. I guess you kind of do, but it's a little small box. And when you have, like, a guest on and you want to do whatever, how are you supposed to fill that out?
So that only shows up on Spotify, too. It doesn't show
up on Spotify
anywhere else, yeah.
But sooner or later, Spotify is clearly going to take over because they've already assimilated Anchor and they assimilate a whole bunch of other stuff. But yeah, it comes down to just, like, titling,
It's a lot like YouTube that way. Your title really helps a lot in getting people to listen to an episode.
And I think that this title is clickbait, bracket, not clickbait, kind of just works because it's clickbait.
It did really well, yeah.
So we have to find an interesting clickbaity subject to talk about in every podcast, so therefore we can title appropriately.
Hey, did you see we could swear now on YouTube?
Oh, I saw they retracted or rescinded.
Saw this video, like, YouTube creators, and it's always funny when somebody swears in like in a professional sense, you know? Because he's like, oh, well, I'm happy now to announce that YouTube has changed its guidelines. Words such as fuck and shit will now be allowed. And he's just saying it just so plainly and everything. It's really funny to hear that.
It's like a cop trying to sound cool by swearing.
It's that little channel that insiders or something like that. It shows up in your YouTube creator studio. There's always a little block there with a video. And
are there still some that are off brand, or is it just like, no, it's okay for all
as
words.
Far as words go? I think it's all okay. I think it also depends upon, you can't use it in the title. You can't say fuck in the title, and you can't, I think it's still like in the first 10 seconds or 30 seconds or something you can't swear, but I think after that all bets are off.
I've been watching, sometimes you'll watch a show on Netflix or something like that and it starts off with like an incredibly hardcore sex scene with nudity and all of the rest, and like they push the boundaries on Netflix. I don't know.
Well, they're also known for like putting all the juicy stuff in episode one, and that really trying to get people to, you know, hooked on these shows. You know what I'm really hooked on right now? Have you heard about this show called Poker Face? It's on Peacock.
No.
Do you remember Columbo? Or are you too young?
I do remember Columbo.
So I always loved Columbo.
It was
a mystery. Yeah, Peter Falk. A mystery series where you would see the crime right at the beginning. You knew who the killer was, but it was fun because Columbo then would go in and track, you know, find all the clues and just annoy the hell out of the killer. You know?
He wouldn't find the clues. He would have the clues and then he'd have a conversation and he would walk away and then you'd go, oh, just one more thing.
Yeah, exactly. One more thing, sir. That cigar and everything. So this show called Poker Face, it's with Natasha Lyonne. I don't know if you know her. She was on like Orange is New Black and... she was a Russian Doll was a series she did a couple years ago. It was okay. But this is a, I guess you'd call it a spiritual successor to Columbo. It is basically a remake of Columbo without calling it a remake of Columbo, which I think is a really smart thing to do. Nobody has said, you know, the producers or anything, or even her, that this, we're remaking Columbo, which would be disastrous to like retitle or, you know, say this is Columbo new, except, hey, we've gender swapped. So it has a lot of the same things. After watching it, you can see that, oh, I see, this is like somebody who really loved Columbo and they're trying to do this thing. She's not a detective. But she kind of like stumbles across these murders or other kind of crimes and she ends up solving them sort of. But oh my God, I'm totally hooked. I've watched it. I think the last episode, they're doing it weekly, which I'm kind of glad to see these weekly episodes again, because it really makes me look forward to watching it. But I think the last episode of first season is tonight. But it's really one of my favorite shows in the last few years. I absolutely love it.
They really have made a switch to kind of like going back to the episodic, like you wait a week until you get your next thing. And I'm always looking for something good to watch. So thanks for the heads up on that.
But you have to sign up for Peacock. That's the only thing. I think that's the only thing I'm watching on. But see, that's what I do is I just sign up for one of these services and then cancel and re-sign. I'm constantly switching these around.
I can see why they didn't rename it Columbo, because that really is just setting yourself up for disaster.
People would hate that. Yeah.
Like, shouldn't that have always just been the way, instead of like the garbage decade that we've gone through where every movie's just been a part 9?
A reboot. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Reboot. Or like a prequel or like a different universe. And it gets very confusing versus retelling a story which has all of the same kind of hit points, but like not. Included, does she wear a trench coat at least?
No, it's nothing like that. It's nothing that anybody, only like people who have watched Columbo would kind of get it. A lot of what they're doing there, it's nothing really overt that way, but I can tell that she must have been a fan of Columbo, just the way she carries herself, even her voice. She's got this raspy voice and she's kind of, I don't know, she just gets herself involved in these things. There's kind of this overall, it's also really nice to see episodic TV again, which is kind of rare these days, where each episode is its own story, you know? And then, so it's not like Breaking Bad or something where you have to follow everything. There is kind of an overall arc that's happening, but it's very minor.
Right, and you can kind of watch each episode individually without.
Yeah.
Let's talk about going to a conference, because that's where you just went to or came back from.
I think we both did. Did you go to a conference too? What were you doing in Chicago?
It's called the Inspired Home Show. It's the largest home show of its kind in the world. And it's basically where all of the places, the retailers like Walmart and Target and all of those folks meet up with all of the producers and designers of houseware products, like exciting things like garbage cans and robot vacuums. And actually it is quite cool. Coffee machines and all sorts of stuff. And so we were there for 5 days, I think. And we have been doing this for, I think, like 7 years. We initially got brought in as like influencers to come and like cover the show. And as time has gone on and we've grown and all of the rest, now we kind of have an interest in the show because we have cleaning products ourselves and all of the rest. So we were in beautiful, windy, cold Chicago, Illinois for that.
Do you think you want to exhibit there in the future?
That, spoiler, is actually what we're planning on doing next year. This was the first year. Like, this was a year that we, the first time that we brought a team, like our team, as opposed to just me and Melissa going and shooting a video and kind of doing what we normally did there. And we did exactly that. And we're looking at getting a booth and setting up and taking over the world.
Is it a B2B kind of thing? Are you, would you be trying to get retailers to take on your...
That's it. It's yeah. As opposed to like, so when you have a product, like you can go and take it to retailers. You can figure out retail yourself. You could go to a large retailer. You could go to a small retailer. Now with like online marketplaces, a lot of places have the ability to get their products at like Walmart.com or whatever it is through the use of these marketplaces and all of the rest. So going out and actively trying to manage all of these relationships is a nightmare because you need to figure out who to talk to and da da da, versus kind of the field of dreams aspect of like, where you, if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. So we are going to show our wares and we're confident of, and we will see, perhaps someone in Europe or an international buyer or whatnot. And that's the best thing about it. It's an international, it's a worldwide show. So there's just, and then opportunities you can't even think of, because there might be an opportunity with a grocer in Ireland. So any grocers in Ireland who are looking for cleaning products who happen to be listening to this podcast.
Irish, Ireland needs some cleaning.
They do. Everybody needs. That's what I've realized.
I don't know why I said that. Do you guys, do you sell on Amazon? You don't sell on Amazon, do you, as a, in a retail third party seller or whatever?
You know what? It ends up kind of being like a branding issue where it's great. Dyson arguably sells on Amazon because it's a whatever, but Dyson kind of has the scale to do it. But when you're a smaller brand, selling on Amazon, I don't know. It's a double-edged sword because you cannot open yourself up to knockoffs and like da 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 da. And we've been intimidated by Amazon.
I've talked to other small businesses who just don't do Amazon. They're like, no, I don't know if it's a good decision or not, but we're just selling off our website or any kind of partners we have.
I think quality is going to end up lasting in every kind of area of life, and I think that's it as well. I think the online marketplaces and the ease of like, oh, so long as you can ship me something in a day, that's what matters, is gonna slowly be replaced by like, I want to know where my product is from, who made it, who's selling it to me, and like,
I think you're right. This is, these are the retailers and sellers who are going to thrive, and I think we've been seeing this through the whole internet revolution. Really, is that even brick and mortar, if you've got a specialty boutique store, you can kind of do all right. It's like these big generalists that seem to be struggling.
Well, and then they kind of seem to do, and it makes sense. They kind of seem to do well for a while, and we were so like enamored by big box stores and just get it all. Like Walmart, I just need everything in one place.
Right.
And we saw the impact on small businesses and mom and pop businesses. And then it kind of got cliched. And then we kind of got complacent just as people. Mm-hmm. And now we just don't care, it seems sometimes, but sometimes it actually does seem like we do care. And it seems like when we do care, we push away from like, Amazon actually is a pretty shitty company. They treat their employees bad. Like, look how rich this one dude is. And like, I'm not the dude who's like, oh, billionaires should be like whatever. But like, there is a point. There is a point when you're like, the pendulum shouldn't swing that drastically each time.
The stuff you get from Amazon, it is a whole different experience. You know, you get it in an envelope or whatever, and it's just thrown on your doorstep.
Box.
But you've bought things, I'm sure, where from specialty sellers, even some of these like subscription services and everything, but they make you feel like you're a special customer, and it's all in the packaging. I know kind of the overpackaging is a separate subject, but they do really well at making the whole experience. For one thing, they're definitely doing it so that it's appealing to unbox them, because they know people are going to be doing this online and sharing that stuff. But you get these, and there'll be like a card in there, maybe signed with the employees, and a real thank you. And I know this is part of the marketing scheme, but it feels to me like they're really taking their customers seriously, and they're not just, here's the damn thing you ordered. You know, you feel like, oh, this is really nice. They're they've really put in the effort on making me feel special.
There's like a guilt associated with getting your dishwasher tabs in a box full of like wrapping paper, and then a box randomly thrown in the snow sometimes, at least here in Canada, where it's like it snows and it gets wet, and I take it and I open up the box and I like put the dishwasher tabs on the counter, and then I cut down the box and I take the packaging of it, and I'm like, man, it was so wasted. And some dude got in his car and drove from the factory to here because I didn't want to go to the fucking store to pick up dishwasher tabs. And there's a weird guilt associated with it versus...
I know, man. I have such mixed emotions when it comes to this stuff, and Amazon too. I know all the problems surrounding and associated with Amazon, but I'm part of the problem because I it's so handy for me to like, oh, I'm out of deodorant. Boom. I don't even think about going to the store for even the smallest things like that. It's just easier to just order it right when it's on my mind. Don't have to think about it. Shows up a day or two later. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot I ordered that. Here's the thing.
And I'll be the first to admit there's times where I mean, obviously, yes, especially if it's deodorant. You can't be late on deodorant, toothpaste or something important like that.
No, I'll literally order it while I'm in the bathroom and I see it running low. And I'm just like, click, boom, it's done.
Yeah, I get that. But I mean, I don't. I think their thought originally was that everybody was going to have an Alexa, and they would just be like, "Hey Alexa, add toothpaste to my," and because that's what they wanted.
Did you mean dining table?
No. And every so often, you come across products on Amazon which just have ridiculous prices associated with them. And just because it's like this weird thing that you can't get shipped any other way. So it's available on Amazon, but it's available on Amazon at an inflated price. To answer your original question, that's literally what kept us away from it. We wanted to be one of the good guys. And also, it's nice to not sell your product being restricted by the confines of like how Amazon presents it versus when you come shopping on Makers. www.makersclean.com.
There you go.
And you learn a lot more about it, and we have more space, and we know how to kind of like,
because you can put in all this supplemental information, like here's great ways to use our products, here's how other people are using them. And I think that's really valuable. Amazon, though, you do have to come up with those 100-word titles for everything, you know.
And then jam as many keywords as red, blue, green, size 1, 2, 4, 6, 8, men's, women's.
It's insane. Does Amazon still work on a keyword-based thing or something?
Is
that what those titles are crazy for? You just want to order like a simple microphone or something.
It's also just product overload. That's the other. You know what? If you're on Amazon looking for microfiber cloths, then you're probably looking for the cheapest microfiber cloth. And I'm sure Amazon has a. Well, they do. They have an Amazon basic microfiber cloth, which I'm sure will disappoint you. And then you'll come to Makers Clean, www.makersclean.com, and buy a real microfiber cloth.
Did you notice any trends in the cleaning sphere while you were there? Any really cool products?
Yes. There's some things that you can't talk about. Ooh. But there's...
Well, if they were at the show, I can't imagine. What, do you have to sign an NDA to just go to the conference?
Yeah, no. You know what? No. No, you don't. It's like a trade-only show. Like, it's a B2B show. And some of the people what I'm getting at is some of the products have, like, they have to be protective of, or they'll have, like, signs which say, you can't take pictures of this. So there's some, like, cool products, which, whatever. But all in all, there's a lot of innovation going on, and a real push towards sustainable, hopefully, more sustainable products. It's nice to see people moving away from plastics and Chinese manufacturing of, you know, like really cheap disposable plastics and all of the rest. And then the larger part of the show is like the food area and the home area. And let me tell you about the amount of air fryers, which are you part of the air fryer movement?
I got to tell you, I absolutely love my air fryer. Yeah. I mean, I use it all the time. It's great. I mean, I put like potatoes in there. I roast vegetables in there all the time. It's amazing.
We have one as well, and it is amazing. They are amazing. It's incredible how many different types there are. I legit saw 800 different styles of air fryers. So
air fryers, where it at?
Air fryers, right now, huh? Let me see. Air fryers, wet bags. Do you know what a wet bag is?
I don't know what a wet bag is.
It's for like canoe or any kind of, yeah. You put all your stuff in it and then you kind of like flip it around and you click it. And if it falls in the water, it's totally fine. They're really good bags. So that's kind of like a bit of a trending product. And then some other odds and ends. Just, you know, you also get to the point where there's a lot of like decanting products. If you know what those are, like literally when you get plastic, the Ziploc bags, and they come in a little box, and you take the Ziplocs out of the little box they come in, and you put them in your custom Ziploc bag holder in your drawer.
I see. like a cozy or something.
Decanting is taking, right. Another example of decanting is taking the Tide Pods out of the thing that they put in and putting it in the little clear glass, display thing on top of your on top of a shelf or
it
something.
It elevates
like that.
It. So people come over and they look at your laundry room and they can go, oh my God, look at that. They're so fancy. You can see, you could literally see their Tide Pods in the glass.
And you know what? If you're reusing an old vase for that purpose or like a jar or something like that, then all the power to you. However, if you're buying a special product to pack a product which already comes in packaging, it's called decanting, and it just ends up being a little like excessive, and it would probably speak to your I know you're not a clutter guy, you like
I'm trying to avoid all clutter, but I like the idea of having Tide Pods in a glass.
So you're gonna do it?
No.
They make a wood
we don't
one.
Use those. We don't use those at all.
Tide Pod. Do you use the syrup?
Well, so we have one of these washing machines that has, this is for the clothes, right? Not the dishwasher.
Yes,
clothes.
Yes.
That's Tide. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, no. The pods have the dishwasher pods.
So our dishwasher has like a thing where you pour in the liquid in the bottom and it stays there for I don't know how long. You can do all kinds of loads before you have to refill it. So you never have to pour it for each load. You don't have to pour the detergent.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. It's fancy, huh?
That's really fancy.
I thought that was like a normal, we've had this for a couple of years now, this washing machine, but yeah, you pour it into a thing in the bottom and it stays there at least for, I don't know, four or five loads, maybe more, or not loads, but I mean sessions. So like we'll have like three loads of laundry each time we do every week. So it'll last like a month.
Wow. No, you know what I've been, I actually have a cleaning channel. I've never heard of this.
You got to look into this.
We're going to write it down right now.
Yeah, so you can have, I'm going to have people over and do that. They're all going to be like, Jennifer, did you see Steve? He's got this washing machine that has the liquid in the bottle in the bottom, so we don't have to put our Tide Pods in glass jars anymore.
Now we can just eat them.
You know what, you were talking about the plastic waste, though. This is something that bugged me, and this will transition into me and my journey last week, but I was in the hotel room and I'm one of these guys who actually uses the hotel room coffee. I'm that much of a coffee drinker. I get up in the morning, I'm like, I'm just going to have to make a cup of coffee. And they all have kind of different types. Either they'll have the K-cups or some of them just have the coffee, kind of like a Mr. Coffee type where they have the little coffee in filters that you just drop in there. But these, the one I was at had one of these where And this is so ridiculous. They have the kind of the mesh filter bag thing that you would normally expect, but it's inside this plastic tray that's wrapped in a package of plastic. So these are one-time use where you unwrap the package and you pull out this tray. It's bigger than like a deck of cards or something. It's a plastic tray. And in that tray is this coffee filter with coffee in it. And I'm like, this is just ridiculous. Why am I unwrapping this, putting this plastic tray in there? Why wouldn't they just have the plastic tray in the machine itself so you don't have to throw the plastic tray away every single time? This was really dumb.
Extra waste. I think I seem to remember there was a story about the amount of K-cups that have been produced. Like if you were to see a pile of it, it'd be, I don't know, the size of a mountain or something ridiculous like that. It's crazy.
Wow.
Or you go to a fast food restaurant and you get a plastic fork and it's wrapped in plastic. Yeah. I do, like, I get it. I get that there's like an opportunity, like a possibility of, but.
Anyhow. You know, here's the up and coming industry, I think, is to manufacture a paper straw that actually works. I mean, that this is one of those things where it all businesses feel good about switching to paper straws. You know, it's a very minor thing you can do in the scope of things. And I think it might just, I don't know if they're plastic straws are even legal anymore here. I'm not really sure. Everybody's just switched to paper. And they all suck.
They suck, literally.
You can't suck.
You can't, yeah. And that, hold on. They collapse.
Isn't there somebody like working diligently on this in his basement somewhere trying to figure out a new improved paper straw? There's got to be a way.
As a manufacturer of a plastic product, microfiber cloths, I assure you it's just an end run until plastics are biodegradable. We will not defeat the non-disposable plastic problem. The problem will go away, quote unquote, once we're there, once literally plastic is not associated with not being able to break down.
Well, don't they have biodegradable plastics, but I don't know how well those work.
And we're just not like at wide scale. And the thing is, yes. So like in the cloth industry, so you have virgin plastic or you have recycled plastic. You have to have a certain mix of different types of plastic. That's why you have blends in cloths, mm-hmm. like 80-20. That'll be like 80% polyester, 20% this. To do recycled, it challenges the efficacy of the actual product because you can't recycle materials to cut them thin enough for microfiber, because it's literally microfiber. It's 1/100th of the width of your hair. It's very, 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 very small. So the issue ends up being like everybody just kind of shrugs their shoulders, knowing that it's like there's nothing that can be done until literally the plastics that are used are either recycled or just can be broken down. Because thinking about recycling, that's ridiculous. It's the thing that we're trying to do, but as we found out, it's a nice thought. It's a nice thought to like.
It makes us feel good.
We run out and you buy a water bottle and you're like, oh, but look, it's A, I can recycle it. Or, you know, it's made from recycled. And I get that makes you feel good, but it's like, but you're holding a plastic bottle in your hand, regardless of whatever. So usually the argument for people who manufacture things is usually that it's just cheaper and it's actually more environmentally friendly to use virgin plastic versus using recycling, because it just adds to
the resources it takes to try to recycle this stuff is crazy. I mean, it's just, and people don't really recycle. All recycle all goes in one bin. These have to be like literally hand sorted. Yeah. It's crazy.
You ever been at the mall and you see those bins in the middle of the mall and they have the different shapes and they're like, oh, so this one's for papers and this one's for light
you
plastic.
You stand there for, what do you do? I stand there organic. For like a 2 seconds and I think, I don't know.
And then you lift it up and you realize they're all going in the same bin.
They're all the exact same.
And even if they weren't, at some point, they're all going in the same bin.
Yeah, it's kind of true. Wow.
But that was supposed to segue on to you being in a hotel room. What were you in a hotel room for?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would you like to know? No, I went to this conference. It's called, and this is like the most worst name for a conference, because it's called Workbench Con. Every time I tell somebody who doesn't know about this, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to this conference. And they're like, where are you going? I'm like, Workbench Con. And they always kind of giggle. They're like, so it's a conference for workbenches? Is that what you're supposed to do? You know, because the Workbench Con, the name doesn't say anything about the people or who it's for or anything. It's just about the thing. And I think that's the problem. They have a marketing problem.
There's so many different words they could have used, but they used one
which
represents something so small to represent a very large group, a conference. How was it?
It was fun. I mean, maybe it could have been called like MakerCon or something like that. But, you know, pay the extra to get the domain on whoever's squatting on it or whatever. It's not really for makers, woodworkers. I mean, it is, but its focus is on social media you know, making your living as a media person, a creator, you know, an influencer, you know. So there was a lot of talk about, you know, how to game the system, how to play the algorithm, and all of this kind of thing that goes along with these types of conferences. And, you know, since I've kind of reached this Zen state in my life about playing this game, I wasn't really that interested in that sort of thing, because there was a lot of people there who are just interested in making content to appeal to a machine, kind of like Louis C.K. was talking about.
Yeah.
Rather than, there wasn't lots and lots of talk about woodworking or making things or something other than individual people you might talk to. So that was the focus of the conference. But the main thing was, it was just really fun to talk to a lot of people who I've known for years and never met, or people who I haven't seen in person in a few years or even longer. And it was great. That was the best part. I mean, it was just fantastic just to see so many. I think there was like 800 people on this thing, wow, which is a pretty good sized conference.
That's,
you know,
a very good sized conference.
Yeah. And there was definitely the kind of the two levels of creator. There's like the kind of upper tier, and then there's like the people who are just interested in trying to get into, you know, Instagram. And that's the thing, is it was mostly Instagrammers. I think if there was one takeaway I had from it, it's like, oh man, Instagram is kind of where it's at right now. They all seem to, all roads seem to lead to YouTube eventually, but at this show, I would guess 75% of the people were Instagrammers, and I don't know them all. There's just so many.
Did everybody bring their own workbench, or was there a workbench for everyone there? There was 800 workbenches there?
Yeah, you had to bring your own workbench, yeah.
Bring your own.
Any size
D-Y-O
would do.
WB.
Yeah, they need a better name on that thing. But, you know, it's fine. I'll go again next year. I think it was definitely worth doing, and it was worth talking. I made some pretty cool connections with some people about, and we talked about, you know, just different ways of growing our businesses and our kind of what we're doing, and got me inspired to try some new things and see what works.
Gets you fired up, doesn't it?
It did. And you know, one thing I learned is that I need a new microphone. This microphone, this Blue Yeti, apparently there's this Shure mic. Have you heard of Shure? S-H-U-R-E. Is that what you have?
Tell me more about Shure microphones.
Oh man, you've got two. That, I didn't know that's what you were using.
Yeah, yeah.
So apparently these, if you get a Shure mic, you don't need really a soundproof booth. It's that good. It'll eliminate all the echo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to do.
Excellent. Get one of those. Now we're going to have consistent microphones.
Yeah, that would be nice. Do you use the little plug-in box or do you USB?
I have a little plug-in box because I have two of the mics and I like to be able to have the... I can help you with that.
I'm going to have to talk to you about that.
Send me a message.
I'll talk to you about that
after the podcast.
Unless you really want this podcast to just grind to a halt.
As we check our phones and just go silent. I had a question, actually, because I was watching some of your videos. The first question is, do you always, or how long have you been wearing a mask while cutting wood?
I started that probably over 10 years ago. It used to be I did not wear a filter mask. And I started reading more and getting more paranoid about breathing in sawdust. And so now I'm like super paranoid. I wear it all the time.
Why does it seem so rare in the space to be wearing? Like, it seems so logical that there's...
It does, because the worst thing is that... You know, our nose and our, we're all built to filter out sawdust. It's fine. You really don't need one for general sawdust, but it's these microparticles that you can't really see that float around in your air all the time after you've finished. You can cut a board and you see it all settle down, but the stuff that's not settling down, that's the stuff that can get in your lungs and can cause serious problems down the line with respiratory problems or whatever.
Have you mentioned this in one of your basics videos or in one of the
safety
videos?
Yeah, it's in my safety video.
I should have been paying attention. I would have, wouldn't have even had to ask that question. But I saw it because I was like, look how cool Steve looks with that mask on. I'm like,
I got that. I got the eye protection.
Yeah.
And the earphone. That's another thing. I don't like loud noises either. I'm trying to protect my hearing as long as I can.
You know what? I went a long, long, long period of time without doing, like, being like, I don't need anything.
Same here. Yeah.
And then as soon as we bought this house and I needed to start riding around on a lawnmower, I did it like a couple times and my ears would just like ring for like, or they would be like numb for like an hour afterwards. I'm like, that's really loud, isn't it? And then I listened to it again and I was like, wow, that's really, really loud. So I put the little cans on and now even when I'm doing snow blowing or anywhere close to an engine running, I have these bad boys on. Your ears are so sensitive.
Yeah, I got the earplugs for when I was going to go see the Cannibal Corpse concert.
Yes.
And I'm so glad I did that because it was just, I mean, they really had it cranked loud, and we were right by the amps, you know, we were right up front. And in even concerts that aren't that loud, I just have this, you know, you have that sloshy feeling in your head afterwards, and it'll be ringing even the next morning. Sometimes I can wake up with my head not feeling right. So I don't worry about, you know, I'm going to put those head, and you can actually hear the music better too, because it kind of, it tones down a lot of that just muddled sound when it gets too loud.
I was just, but getting back to the mask, I was just so surprised that more people don't do that. Cause like, I saw you and I'm like, you know what? I forgot to do that. I have all this stuff. And the one thing I did, I had the goggles and da, 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 da. I'm like, I don't have, I don't breathe in all that stuff in, making a paste in my belly. No, thank you.
I see a lot of younger people who aren't as interested in these safety. And maybe this is something that as you get older, you just kind of think, well, I'm getting closer to death. You know, I might as well try to extend this as long as I can. But when I was young, I didn't care. I would cut boards. I've seen guys working on our house and they'll be out in the driveway cutting boards with like no safety gear on at all. I'm like, God, and you guys are professionals doing this.
There's someone walking around on the roof without the little kind of being tethered somehow or whatnot. And that's
we had two guys up on our roof this week. We had a skylight replaced.
Oh, luckily they were supposed to be there. It wasn't just two guys on your roof.
Just not two random guys walking around on the roof. And then we had two skylights put in. You know what we had in our second bathroom, the guest bathroom? We had one of these tunnel lights. Have you seen these things? It's like a lens, but you can... So you don't need like a full skylight. It's like a tube that goes up. You can like direct it anywhere up on your roof, maybe a 12-inch opening, and it comes down into, it looks like a light in your bathroom, but it's just like this kind of lens, and it's highly, I guess, reflective inside of this tube, and it's just bright. It's really cool. Now, every time I walk by that bathroom, I think we left the light on, and just this little skylight. It's really cool.
And you got another skylight, like a full-size skylight?
Yeah, the other one was leaking since we're having all this rain lately this year, and it started leaking. The thing is old. It's probably 40 years old or something. So the guy was like, yeah, you know, this is way past its lifespan. Now that we're, you know what we're having now? Atmospheric rivers.
What?
See? Like... They keep coming up with, I think, meteorologists and weather people, they love to come up with new terms for things, and then they try to make you believe, like, no, it's always been this way. We've always had this term. And so now this year, that's the buzzword, atmospheric river. There's another atmospheric river event heading to the Bay Area. And that's what we're supposed to have that happen today. Another atmospheric river. I don't know what it means. It's like the moon. You know, they always held, it used to have like two different names for different moons. You know, like there was the blue moon or blood moon. And now there's like, well, every time there's a moon, there's a new super blood moon. This one only happens once in a decade. And then the next month there's another. I'm like, I don't know. They all look like the moon to me.
Yeah. It's like they were almost always there, but now we only pay attention to it because everyone's looking for content.
We have to have a name for them. Yeah.
Oh, everything it's an event. And then everything that has a name gets written about 500 billion times. And then you search it once on your phone and then you're recommended it a bunch of times. And you're like, hey, is everybody talking about this? Yeah. No, they're not. I watched one of your other videos. I think it was definitely on the Steve Ramsey Plus channel. And it was your video about striving for perfection in woodworking. And I wanted to ask you about that.
Oh, so that was actually on my main channel and it tanked.
I knew
it wasn't going to do anything, but yeah, it totally tanked.
Well, but it got a lot of engagement and you had a lot of people being like, this is something that needs to be talked about. And sometimes, regardless of views, it's fun to talk about something.
I think it's important, yeah.
Isn't perfection a weird thing? Isn't like this striving for perfection and then that fueling like the veneer of social media and everybody wanting to have like, and how that like interacts with... And you had a larger point of the CNC machines kind of like,
yeah, that was kind of the jumping off point. I guess my overall thesis was that perfection is overrated, that it's imperfections that make us human. And that by trying to, at least in the realm of woodworking, when we're constantly trying the new machines, there's, you know, CNC, which is a computer controlled machine that cuts the wood for you. There's lasers and robots now, and there's, you know, and these all exist to kind of cut the perfect board and to make the perfect project. And so that all the furniture will be perfect. And at that point, I think that we kind of lose something of ourselves and that the furniture is no longer unique when everything is perfect, when our goal is perfect. And so I think a lot of these manufacturers of these tools assume that what everybody wants is perfection, when I'm not really sure if that's the case. If you want perfection, you're just going to buy furniture at IKEA because there's no human hands ever touch that stuff. You know, it will be perfect. But if you are making something yourself, if you really want perfection, and the end of all of this will lead up to, you know, not only robots building the furniture, and you would just be kind of more of a designer of the furniture, but then here we are talking about AI again, but ultimately AI could take over that job too as the designer. So you would basically just describe what you want, and then a series of machines could literally build the furniture that you want. It's kind of like a replicator on Star Trek, you know, where it's like, here's the thing that you want. And I don't know if people necessarily want to do that as a hobby, if that's even a hobby. And that's, I think, on the bright side, the way I look at it is that the more technology kind of takes over these tasks that we don't want to do, that technology will be relegated to production, you know, factories that are making mass furniture and these sort of things. That's great. But whenever technology takes over something, that thing, which is what we were talking about a little bit with JJ last week, that thing that it takes over really becomes more of an art form, and that people start to embrace it and find new ways of using it in exciting ways that they wasn't happening before. We saw this with photography, really, because when photography came out, they thought, well, this is going to destroy painting. Why do we need to paint pictures anymore? But instead it led to like impressionists and different people who were taking painting in different directions and really exploring that. So I have a much more optimistic view about how technology kind of inspires artistic.
Do you feel like social media has taken away some of the genuine interest in woodworking? Does now it just become one of the avenues that one can kind of more so fulfill the, you said yourself that you went to a conference about, you know, workbenches apparently. At the conference you have a bunch of people talking about Instagram specifically. Yeah. And I think you're saying Instagram specifically because people are little bit weirded out by TikTok right now, or using that as like the same word, like it's just short satisfying content, or like editing something in a very, very particular way. And my question for you is, like, did it feel more about a content creation and media conference, and less about making stuff than it did, or the other way around.
No, absolutely. I heard the word content like 10 times more than I heard the word building or making or anything like that. It was definitely, you know, geared around that. But I saw, and this is why I don't think TikTok will, it's going to reach a breaking point, because when I look at that compared to Instagram, and this is why everybody's on Instagram and why all the people there, I heard hardly anybody talking about TikTok. And these are, there are a lot of young people at this conference. You know, it wasn't just like me and guys who've been on YouTube forever. But you, Instagram is really good in the way that it establishes these communities around people. With, you've got DMing, you can DM people with the stories, you can react to them. It's much more integrated around people than TikTok is. Mm. TikTok is just like, it's a content, you know, a fire hose. It's just like, boom, you want content, here's your content right here. It doesn't really matter who's making it. You know, I don't even know. Can you even DM people on TikTok?
And that's kind of it. Like, there's no real connection. It's just like a content whorehouse.
It is. Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it. But I think a lot of people, though, are producing woodworking or other projects, and immediately they're wanting to try to figure out how they can monetize that through content creation, not really making the product. I really envy people like my wife, who, she's been knitting and crocheting her entire life, and she only recently started posting stuff on Instagram. She doesn't even have a profile pic, and she doesn't care. But I've asked her before, because her, and this is just me thinking everything has to be monetized, you know, my mindset. I'm like, man, you ever think about just like maybe selling this, some of this stuff on Etsy and everything? And she's like, nah, I just like doing it. To her, it's always a hobby. It is just something she loves doing. And I'm like, man, that is so cool. It really is. You don't see a whole lot of that anymore.
Because social media has really, really tainted our thoughts towards everything. We talked about it at the beginning of the year, where we were talking about not making everything content. Like, even after doing this for so many years and having varying levels of success in doing it, like, you still get to the point where it's like, ugh, it's absolutely ridiculous that I look through the world through this lens. Everything is through the lens of content, aka, you know, and JJ, work. JJ literally made that. He's like, it's just another way of saying
content
work.
Is just another word for work.
But
yeah,
I think when you say content, you're like, oh, no, there's this other, to your point, there's this other thing. I can learn how to knit, and I'm gonna make videos about my knitting journey, and then when I get good enough, I'm gonna make videos and capitalize off of that. I'm gonna sell my knitting stuff on my web store that I build, and then before you know it, you just fucking hate knitting, because like all of a sudden it became content, or it became work, and your hobby
then you don't have a hobby. It's and I think hobbies are important for humans. I mean, assuming that you're sort of at this more self-actualized stage where you've got your basic needs met, I think that it's pretty important to have some sort of leisure activity.
Is there a woodworking conference?
Like, there used to be. Yeah, there used to be woodworking in America, which, you know, if you're outside of America, sorry.
But it sounds very big. You guys have like 350 million people, so that sounds like a huge conference.
Yeah, they kind of folded, and that was more geared, that was totally geared towards just, like, anybody could go there and get the latest woodworking tools and see techniques and stuff like that. And then there's a thing that Durest is doing called Maker Camp. I don't know how much he's involved in it too much anymore. I think that he still is, but I think he's got kind of other people running it. Upstate New York once a year, where it's just like a hands-on, you're just going to just be making things. You know, they're not, as far as I know, they're not trying to get you into social media or take their 12-step program or whatever.
But that's what conferences have become. Conferences have become like every single industry's content makers. That's the conference. The photography, you know, conference is about all the photography influencers who come together and all the
influencers.
Influencers. Oh, man. Are we done?
Influencer.
Are we done influencer. With the influencers yet?
Just the word itself makes me bristle. I hate the idea of somebody whose job is to influence other people to consume.
What do you mean? Yeah, and that's just it.
It's just like consume, buy, everything is. Yeah. And this is what's happened to a lot of the people in my space who are creating content. It used to be about making projects and everything, but once the tool companies got really more heavily involved, a lot of these channels have switched over to just basically full-time hawking tools, you know, third parties. They're just like completely, and people seem to like that, but it's just everything is about consumption now. Just all about how much can you consume, how much stuff can you put in your house and your shop,
how much media you can consume, and how many stories. And if you have nothing to think about right now, you better grab your phone and go find something to have a thought about. And like this weird proactive searching for like feeling like you're being left behind if you're not. You know, you're not earning if you're not turning. I don't know if that's not a saying. I just literally, and it's a dumb one.
That's true. If you're not earning, you're not turning.
There you go. I'm going to crochet that on a pillow.
Yeah, just don't sell it. Just make it your hobby.
Sorry. You know what? Going back to that video, there was one last thing I wanted to talk about. And it's borderline. This is becoming just like old men rant about stuff they don't like.
Maybe we need to branch out a little bit.
You know what?
Or this is just our sweet spot.
I think it's the sweet spot.
About
you talk about buying used stuff, and I've realized that there's an entire generation of people who do not understand that when something is ready to be moved on from, or like you need to acquire something new, that there's a huge used market available, and it is the ultimate, most environmentally friendly, most whatever. Mm-hmm. All of the people who are like, I want to sell my car to go and buy an electric car because I want to make a difference in the world. You make way more of a difference continuing to drive the car you're driving now.
Yeah.
And, you know, eliminate a new footprint. But I loved it because I'm sure tools, like you say, especially when you have creators being like, hey, it's the latest and greatest. It has a built-in level and now it connects to your phone so you can see
laser beams.
Yeah, every time the saw rotates, there's a counter. It's the saw rotation counter on your phone. You can download an app, but like
it's an app,
buy a new saw. And that it's, you know what, I saw it in telephones where it was like, once you kind of got past like, hey, this one has a camera, hey, this one has social media and the internet, hey, this one has the ability to get games on it, like once we got to that point, then they were like, hey, this one has three cameras because now everybody has three cameras. And like this one takes special pictures. Like it ended up being like the innovation was less about like, oh my gosh, there's a really good feature associated with it. Now makes coffee, and it just ends up being like small. Oh, it's a small, it's thinner. Remember when everything in Apple just kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller? Yeah. So,
and that's what Tom Scott was talking about in his video about AI. He's like, this is why you don't see lines at the Apple store every time they release a new phone anymore. It's kind of leveled off. They're desperately trying to, they have these ads, and I use the Pixel phone. Have you seen the Pixel commercial where it has the one feature they're really trying to sell is that you can eliminate distractions from your photo, like one click and you eliminate the people who are in the background or whatever.
Yes.
It's like the one thing. But the commercial is so dumb because it's like, eliminate annoying distractions. And it has this person like sitting on the side of a pool, and there's the person jumping into the pool, and apparently the person jumping is the distraction. I didn't get this concept at all. Wait and then just take another picture.
In any given social situation, Steve, since you clearly don't know, The person who is recording content has right of way. If you're in any kind of social situation. So this guy, you're saying, it sounds like he was at a pool using the pool.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this other person was there trying to create some content to influence people.
I think so.
So you tell me who has right of way in that case, Steve.
I got kind of okay boomered too the other day.
Really?
Not really. They didn't say that, but I took a picture of some people. And I did a horizontal picture. And they're like, wow, we can tell you're old. You shot horizontal. And I'm like, well, there's three of you. It seems to me it doesn't make sense to shoot a vertical picture with three people. You can come in tighter and you can get three heads in a row. But no. And then I started looking and I'm like, oh, shit, you're right. Everybody shoots vertical, everything. I'm like, well, I still shoot video horizontal.
I will hold a camera to take a picture of people. Sorry, a camera being a phone. And I love horizontal because you have so much more, you have so much landscape.
Especially like on selfies, it seems easier on selfies to do horizontal.
Or if you're just trying to get, and also if you understand how lens curves work and whatnot, there's so much more you can do with wide. However, God forbid I try to take a picture of my wife and it be, you know, sideways. It's just incorrect. So you have to go vertical. And
yeah, well, I mean, if it was a single person, even two people, I'll do vertical. It makes sense. But if there's more people, it seems like then you're starting to get more horizontal format. You'd want to do that.
And if you want to share it, just...
Well, you know, it's what Jared Poland does when he takes photos. People hand him, you know, their phone. They say, hey, can you take a picture of us? He always takes them both ways. He'll take, you know, a couple portrait, and then he turns it around, does a couple... Can you imagine what it'd be like to have run up to him? You're like, hey, can you take a picture of us with our phone? You don't know who he is.
Do you know how this phone works? It's an iPhone. Have you used an iPhone? Cool hair.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I've got it all set up for you. You don't need to do anything. Here's the button you need to press.
I had an old man moment as well. We had an old man moment, and then I called myself out on an old man moment. We were doing a spring sale. That doesn't sound too exciting. However, we were trying to find stuff around the spring that we could do that isn't just like jump into spring or whatever. The gay, you know.
The gay sale. Spring is so
that
gay.
Part out. Gay in the happy sense is what I was referring to. It's a happy one.
Dude, there's your old man moment. Nobody uses gay in that sense anymore.
No one uses the word gay. Yes, that's right.
Nobody uses the word gay in the gay sense anymore, too, because now it just means like stupid, at least for younger people. Although I think that's starting to trail off now, too.
I mean, I just literally slipped. I remember that one from well before when I used it in that same way. And I know I live in a world now where you keep it just between you and the people who listen to your podcast. but it is funny. And I love the word gay. I think gay is a fantastic word because it has three letters and starts with a good sound. Perfect. And that's just funny. What was I getting at? Byron.
I have no idea.
That's all I have, my old man moment. We were trying to find something to associate with spring that wasn't whatever. And we're doing an email. So it's like, what's an excuse to, not an excuse, but like, what's a reason to send someone an email? There should be some value associated with it. So my first thought was, hey, the clocks are turning back. So let's send a reminder to turn their clocks back. And it was a great idea. And I went through, did a whole bunch of creative, put it all together, pictures, and found icons, wrote a whole email, set your clock, don't forget. And I realized that everybody's clock just automatically gets set these days and no one actually turns their clock back.
Turn those hands back an hour, get it set.
It's like, great. So we changed it. No clocks
ever a watch wearer? Or do you wear a watch?
I have been a watch wearer for a very long time. I have one watch, and yes, I wear it on special occasions.
It's more of like a fashion thing, isn't it, than an actual
functional. Yeah, and more of like if it's to like, work off a thing.
Yeah, I used to wear a watch a long time, all the before phones came out, and then it didn't really have a purpose anymore. But yeah, I used to remember having to turn the clock back and had the little stem. I used to have the really old ones where you had to wind them, you know. Ooh. back in the day.
Here's
really old. This podcast is just getting really out.
We talked about Columbo. And
yeah, it's like everything. Nobody under the age of 30 or 40 is going to listen to this nonsense. But I remember when the first digital watch came out, and because a kid on the playground had one of these, and it was so cool. But you had to press a button, and then it was a red digital numbers on there. It wasn't like always on LEDs.
LCD,
I guess it was. Yeah. And you had to, but it was just black, normally, the face. So every time you wanted to see the time, you had to press the button.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I remember in the early 80s, the calculator watch became the cool thing.
Yeah.
And the buttons were so small, and you had to somehow like, and a calculator, that's when you had a calculator on your wrist. That was a very, very early smartwatch.
Yeah, there was a commercial, one of these fake commercials that SNL did years ago, where it had like the newest complicated watch that required three hands to use, you know, and it had... You would use it, and then a couple other people would have to come over and push buttons on it.
Are you interested in joining the wave of awesomeness that is smartwatches, or are you like, nah?
Yeah, not really. I don't know. I don't really see what that offers me when I already have my phone handy. But I know like my trainer, he has one. He likes to send messages on it by talking into it in a really stilted tone.
I'm starting to like not having to have my phone with me at all times to like track my steps and to like whatever. I kind of like the fact that you, because Melissa has the Apple Watch or whatever it is, and she uses it to, she can track her heartbeat. She can, if she keeps it on, she can track her sleep. It does move. Like, it's amazing the sensors and what they can actually do. And I don't like the Apple Watch because I don't think it's particularly good looking. I don't like square face watches. I just think it kind of looks like a computer screen on your, and that's fine. Like if you, that whatever floats your boat. However, now like, I used to have a bunch of watches, and then I got a Tag watch, and that was like my, like, oh my gosh, I finally arrived. I have a job which can pay me enough to have a reasonable watch. And I wore that watch till the, you know, for the longest time, that was my favorite watch until, again, you know, obviously once you start having a phone, you don't need to have a watch. So it kind of falls into the background. However, now Tag have smartwatches. So I can now have the, you know, awesomeness of a Tag watch, but the sensibility of having a smartwatch. So nice. I was actually thinking about maybe doing that and trying to get rid of my phone altogether.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think, don't you still need the phone though to use the?
I mean, you also just kind of need a phone to use a phone, I guess.
Yeah.
But like the thought is like not needing to, like, I just don't want the phone with me at all times. I like the fact that it's now just on my wrist. I guess that's the larger point that I'm making. It doesn't matter if it's Tag. It doesn't matter if it's whatever. I'm now starting to like it because now that I've taken a lot of steps away from my phone, like it's like, you know, I don't do Reddit or Twitter or stuff like that on my phone anymore. I still do it because it's like, oh, that tracks my steps and I need my notes and whatever. If I had all that on my wrist and I didn't have to track my phone around, I would be down with that. So that's what I was thinking.
I saw a couple of people on the plane sitting next to me. It was a couple, and they each had those, they're calling them dumb phones. I forget what the name of it, the light phone, I guess they're called, where it's just bare bones, you know, gray screen, and you can just do texting and some minimal things on there. But that was the first time I've ever actually seen anybody using those things. I wanted to get into a real deep conversation with them about it, but I didn't, you know, want to be that airplane guy.
You should put it a rotary. You should pull it a rotary phone. Like, yeah, you think yours is old? This one isn't even plugged into anything.
There used to be a lot of these prank channels on YouTube, as you know, and some of them were actually did like fun pranks, not the mean spirited ones. But I remember one where they would, they took like a whole PC with the tower and the big, huge monitor and everything into a Starbucks or a coffee shop, you know, and set it all up there while everybody's using their laptops.
That's funny. Do those still exist? Like, do good prank channel like that? Like, that shouldn't even be called a prank. Yeah. There should be a separate name.
It's, yeah. Like the flash mobs, too. Remember, those were kind of fun, too.
Yes.
Yeah. All of a sudden, people
until they
kind of
got annoying. I liked when it just kind of got to the thing where people were like, "We're done with the flash mobs. Could you please?"
That was a very short period of time, wasn't it? Flash mobs. It was just a few years. I think that was real popular.
It was, or like there would be like a group that would do wacky things on the subway or something like that. It was the early days. Wow, we've been very nostalgic in this episode.
Here we are every episode. We talk about the old ways, the old days.
The title of this could be like, if you're under 39.
Yeah, we were just talking though at the beginning of this and how titles are important now for podcasts. That's so, true. You know, nobody's going to listen if they see that title.
I think this might be the best podcast ever recorded. There's the title.
I like it.